Life had something deeper to teach me about the true nature of love. It was a year after the fire. We had settled into a new flat in Malibu south of all the devastation, this time in the hills with a view of the ocean. Somehow Grace seemed to support us in getting our lives started again from scratch. So many people, even complete strangers, were kind and generous to us during that year. Furnishing our new home had taken every dime we had, and so Bob had written several letters to the Internal Revenue Service requesting that, under the circumstances, we be put on a payment plan to pay our overdue taxes. The fire had been financially devastating, and we were doing what we could to get our lives back together. Bob and I had been working out of the country for nearly 2 months. Our air tickets allowed a stopover in India. And so on a shoestring and a prayer, we went to visit a spiritual teacher there. It seemed it was a time for so many lessons, first the tumor and the fire. And when we visited the teacher, I felt a deep surrender, an unslakable thirst to learn whatever source had to teach me of its nature. During our stay, I had a crashing spiritual experience, a feeling that my pot had been smashed, that my own separate identity, all that I thought was me, my ego, had crumbled into dust. What was left was pure awareness shining in everything everywhere. On the plane ride home, there was the awareness that I was looking at everything with fresh eyes, as if for the first time. Everything was scintillating as me. I had no idea that what lay ahead in Malibu would end up mirroring the experience in India. My life would never be the same. Lugging my heavy suitcases up the stairs to our new flat, weary and tired from the long trip, I still found myself seeing everything freshly. The jade tree looked so lush. The flowering ice plant looked so vibrant. And when I stepped into the flat, threw open our sliding glass doors and drank in the fresh sea air, filling my lungs with the salty seaweed smell of the ocean, I wondered if it had ever smelled this glorious. I looked behind me at the kitchen table. There was a stack of mail piled high, which had always given me a welcome, yes, you've arrived home feeling. So before unpacking our bags, I rifled quickly through the lot to see if perhaps there was some good news from someone. 5 heavily stuffed envelopes, addressed from the IRS, and dated at different times, were in amongst the other letters. Great, I thought, they must have finally responded to Bob and put us on a payment plan. Though I usually left the bills for Bob, I felt strangely compelled to open them first. Expecting good news, I was not prepared for what I read. Shocked, I thought. There must be some mistake. Can they really do this? We've just been devastated by a fire. Thinking it must be a mistake, I quickly tore open another more recent IRS letter. Same words, only more demanding. They were taking 100% of our wages and were freezing our bank accounts. How is it possible that when you've lost everything in a fire, the government could take away even your ability to put food on a table? Didn't they realize they were taking everything we had? I felt the wind had been knocked out of me. Bob, you need to look at these. I stood at the kitchen table stunned, unable to think. Looking for something that might be a little more friendly to read, I tore through the pile and found a letter from my daughter Kelly. Kel has always been my soulmate. I prided myself on the deep abiding respect we had for one another. How we could tell each other anything and shared our deepest secrets. I felt ours was not just a special mother-daughter relationship, but a remarkable one. Her handwriting instantly warmed my heart, and I made a mess of opening the envelope, not able to open it quickly enough. My heart stopped. Tears flashed in my eyes. Her words cut through me. She wrote that while we were away, she'd been divorced. And on looking back through her life, she felt Bob and I had been too strong an influence on her. She really didn't want to have any more contact with us, and didn't know when she would. She left no number, and no forwarding address. Her letter had come so out of the blue, seemingly out of nowhere. I truly couldn't imagine what we had done or said. It just didn't make sense. We just arrived home, and in 5 minutes, it seemed as if our whole world was coming tumbling down around us. 2 days later, not knowing where to turn, with no money to pay a lawyer to help us, not having a clue about who else to ask about the IRS, Bob and I were standing in our bedroom. There was a feeling in the air of everything being on tenterhooks, on shaky ground. Under the strain, Bob's temper seemed to flare, and unexpectedly he blurted out that I need to get real and wake up to what was going on around me, and not just with the finances. Didn't I know he had fallen in love with another woman? Hadn't I figured it out yet? I stood there open-mouthed, absolutely stunned, eventually thinking he might have a crush on someone we both knew. I mumbled, "Who? What do you mean you're in love with another woman? Who is it?" "It's someone I met on my 50th birthday last August. We've been passionately in love ever since." Still stunned and uncomprehending, I stupidly asked, "Are you physically involved?" He gave me a must-I-spell-it-out-to-you look and said, "What did you think I meant by passionately? This is not some one-night thing, Brandon. This is serious. I've already spoken to her about marriage." I was dumbstruck, blown out of the water. I'd never seen any signs or clues of anything. I was so unsuspecting, so trusting. We were both so much in love with each other. Our marriage seemed so alive. It wasn't as if we had a dead, empty marriage like so many I'd seen. We still both called each other our true love, and Bob still had the ability to make my heart skip when I heard his car pull up. Ours had been a high romance, a legendary love. Even the spiritual teacher in India had commented on the rarity of the devotion we had for each other and how we were an extraordinary example to all couples. I'd always seen us holding hands together, in rocking chairs, still deeply in love with one another until we died. It was the only thing in life I was absolutely certain of. Bob and Brandon were two names set together in stone. This must be some mistake. The words didn't match what I knew in my heart to be true. The words didn't match what I knew was the reality, that he loved me more than life itself as I did him. The conversation went on to the mundane particulars as he pointed out to me all the signs I stupidly and trustingly had missed. Walking out in the living room, it seemed as if the whole world, as I knew it, came crashing in around me. Nothing was as it seemed. Nothing was certain or real anymore. Everything I had thought of as my life had been stripped away, and there was nothing to cling to, nowhere to turn. It felt like free-falling in nothingness. No walls to grab onto, and nowhere to land. The tumor, the fire, the IRS, no money, husband leaving, Kelly gone. Was there anything else that I had thought was my life that could go? It was just like in India when I felt my ego had been smashed. Here my identity in the world as I knew it, mother, beloved wife, livelihood, even my ability to survive, had been stripped away. Was there nothing certain or permanent in the world? Feeling extremely present and sharply aware, I walked up the stairs to the kitchen to get a glass of water. As I passed the refrigerator door, a quote our dear friend Robbie had given us strongly caught my eye. The words arrested me. They seemed to leap off the page. "Know whatever comes to you unexpected to be a gift from God, which will surely serve you if you use it to its fullest. It is only this that you strive for out of your own imagination that gives you trouble." I read it 3 times. The words penetrated me to the core. Know whatever comes to you unexpected to be a gift from God, which will surely serve you if you use it to the fullest. It is only that which you strive for out of your own imagination that gives you trouble. As I stared at them, I knew the words to be true. Every cell in my body knew they were true. Truth itself knew that truth was speaking. And though I couldn't know the mystery of what was happening, all I could do was trust that somehow there would be a gift in it, and that if I used it fully, it would surely serve me. Once again, in the middle of catastrophe, the signs of grace were speaking loud and clear. Time stood still. All fell silent, and a profound decision arose from inside. A decision to trust in what was happening, no matter what. It was a decision to know with certainty that it was all somehow a gift from God. And though I couldn't fully understand its mystery, I knew in time the gift would be revealed. In that decision to trust came complete surrender. In surrender, the presence of love filled the room and permeated everywhere. I was bathed in it, embraced in it. Yet I also knew it to be who I am. Alive, scintillating, the presence of love was everywhere, and there was no place I could go where it was not. Source had been teaching me so profoundly, using my life as the classroom. With the tumor, you are not your body. With the fire, you are not your material possessions. With the IRS, you are not your money or your ability to survive. With Kelly, you are not your relationships. With Bob, you are not the romance or the marriage. You are this love that is present when all else comes and all else goes. Bodies wither and die. Possessions leave. Relationships leave. Lifestyles leave. But you are this love that is present when all else has come and all else has gone. Eternal love. The only real love. The only thing that cannot come and cannot go. This was the one beloved worth being true to. This was the one love worth making a marriage with. I made a vow that I would be true to this beloved for the rest of my life. I would make my life an endless prayer of gratitude in surrender to this love that is here when all else had forsaken me. I was reminded of the story Footprints. One night, a man had a dream. He dreamed he was walking along the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed the scenes from his life. For each scene, he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand. One belonged to him, the other to the Lord. When the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand. He noticed that many times along the path of his life, there were only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happened at the very lowest and saddest times in his life. This really bothered him, and he questioned the Lord about it. Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I have noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there is only one set of footprints. I don't understand why when I needed you most, you would leave me. The Lord replied, My precious, precious child, I love you and would never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. This was the first time the story really had a true meaning for me. Here, in the most devastating moments of my life, Source was here, carrying me, embracing me. Not two, just one.